What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardwarth. This week I'm joined by senior writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Going okay. We've also got podcast producer Ben Elman here. Hey, Ben.
Hey there, everybody.
It's a special week, folks. It's iPhone review week. So you get to hear the crew after they've been dog-tired testing and writing up the iPhone reviews for the past week. Sam is here to talk about his iPhone Air review. We'll also be discussing the iPhone 17 and 17 Pro reviews from Sherlyn and Billy Steele on the site. Yeah, a whole bunch of things happening this week. Also, we've got some Meta Connect news. We finally see the Meta smart glasses with displays. Sam and I will talk about, like, do they look cool? Do they seem functional? Should we even support Meta smart glasses? We'll dive into all of that. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Drop us a review on iTunes. It really does make a difference. And leave us an email at podcastengadget.com if you have any questions that may get used in our Ask Engadget section of the site. You can also join us Thursday mornings, typically around 10:30 a.m. Eastern, on our YouTube channel for our live streams. We'll show off gadgets. Like this week, we will be showing off the iPhone Air. And, you know, you get to see hands-on times. You don't normally get to do that with the audio version. Let's get right into the reviews. Sam, iPhone Air. I think we were all a little skeptical. Like, it looked cool when Apple first announced it. We were all skeptical of the battery life and, like, will the looks be worth the trade-offs here? How is it for you?
Yeah. So in terms of design, I want to say, like, if everyone could have this design in an iPhone without, like, thinking about any trade-offs or compromises,
right,
people would be so happy. The design is truly excellent. I mean, on a practical level, you can think about this as like a really, really nice version of the iPhone 17 Plus because there is no 17 Plus this year. But it's so much more than that because, you know, they put a titanium frame, which is super strong. The display is actually a little bit smaller than what you'd kind of expect for a Plus, but it's a 6.5 inch display. Very nice. It has ProMotion support and all that. But like just holding it, this like, I hate saying this because, but it's really true in this case. But this is one of those things that you really do have to touch, to have to hold, to like fully appreciate, yeah, because it really is that sleek. And I actually like it a little bit more. And this is like coming from an Android person. I like it a little bit more than the Galaxy S25 Edge, just because I think, you know, the way Samsung has kind of rounded off the corners, polished the edges, it just feels so much nicer to hold. The edge is a little bit too sharp and a little bit too boxy for my taste. And then on top, you know, you can nitpick the iPhone Air is 5.6 millimeters and the S25 Edge is 5.8 millimeters, which is practically the same thing. But, you know, it's just a really, really nice device. That said, you know, we do kind of have to talk about what Apple had to do to make this thing a reality. And one of the big issues is that there's only a single rear camera. I said this in the review, like, I do appreciate the kind of, like, the subtle, like, the crafting in the design of the phone is super nice. And, you know, they were able to shove a lot of the, like, camera guts into this, what they're calling the camera plateau. I still think that's kind of a silly name. Oh, Apple, here's my idea. Call it the camera island. You have a dynamic island in the front. You can have a camera island in the back. Have lots of islands. It's great. We don't need a plateau. But
it seems like a lot of guts of the phone are up there, Sam. Right? Like that's kind of part of the new design. A lot of the SoCs, I feel like, are getting shoved up towards.
Yeah, You know, Apple talked about how they kind of centralized the logic board in the iPhone Air to not only better distribute heat, but to kind of enhance that thinness and make that sleek design possible. And you'll notice that, like, if you use the iPhone Air, the thing that gets warm the first when you're, like, really pushing it is this camera plateau. And then it kind of spreads down to the center of the phone.
I mean, that's, but, you know, very interesting for just, like, the feeling of holding it, too. So, like, you don't need to worry about, you know, it kind of burning your hand a little bit. People always talk about that, too, when it comes to like switching to a new iPhone, but then we always say like it's indexing, it's doing a lot of work behind the scenes. So like, yes, you don't even have to worry about that if you have just switched to this new iPhone Air.
Yeah. And it's kind of surprising because it doesn't have a vapor chamber like you get on the 17 Pro line. And in normal use, it's runs really efficiently. And that's kind of one of the other big stories with this phone is Apple has done a lot of work to make this thing what it's calling its most power efficient a phone ever made. And part of that is it has a new C1X chip, which is the new modem inside the iPhone Air. And it's really, really good. The one drawback is that it doesn't support just millimeter wave 5G. You get other, you know, mid-band, low-band 5G and stuff like that.
Oh, wait, so, I didn't clock that initially. So that means if you're on Verizon, you're hosed.
Verizon has expanded its mid-band and low-band 5G, right. So you're not completely hosed. But
millimeter wave is the good shit. That is
the millimeter wave is like the peak. Yeah. If you need like
a who gigabit. Has millimeter wave? We've been talking
a
about
a lot of people have, dude. A lot of people have.
If you live in a city, Ben, you have millimeter wave. I don't know what network you're on, but if you're in New York City, you probably have millimeter wave.
Wait. Ben has the iPhone SE. Yeah. Ben has not seen millimeter wave yet, but Ben, it is everywhere. Okay. I walk out to my suburb and I hold my phone up, 5G ultra wideband, 800 megabits down. Yeah. So it is the
carriers, especially since the pandemic, before when like 5G was like a kind of a novelty, the carriers have been doing a lot of expansion in terms of millimeter wave 5G, especially Verizon, because they've been kind of the leader in terms of just millimeter wave 5G coverage.
So that's honestly, that's something I didn't fully clock before, but I was looking at this phone, Ben and Sam, like it's. When this thing was announced, I was like, we see all the compromises, but it compels me. It compels me because it's like, this is such a perfected version of Apple's design vision. You know, like it just, it looks like it'll be something that's nice to hold. That's what
it really is. Yeah. And so like all the podcast listeners probably know at this point, I'm a big fan of foldable phones. Mm-hmm. And so I like, you know, having that like flexibility and adaptability. But if I was going to go to the complete opposite end of the spectrum and I wanted something just super light, super easy, breezy to carry around, this is like the closest that I've been to like going back to an iPhone in like a decade. Because I had an iPhone 3G and a 4 and a 5 and before I switched over to Android. It is a stylish phone. I don't know if people are going to buy it like for the fashionability, but I could see it happening.
It kind of feels like just looking at this thing, I cannot wait to go to a store and just like touch it. I actually have plans to do that tomorrow.
Oh yeah, I went to an Apple store this past weekend and I was like, can I touch it? And not yet.
It's not out though. You gotta go Friday. Yeah, tomorrow.
Every time I like hand this off to like a non-techie person, just like, you know, like a neighbor, or like, you know, some like parent friends that I'm talking to at the playground, they all have the same reaction. They go, ooh, just like a really like a quiet ooh, and they're like, oh, okay. They like instantly get it. And then they start doing the like the mental arithmetic. It's like, you know, do I want the single camera? Can I, you know, do I want to lose having that ultra wide and the telephoto camera? And then the other thing is that the other kind of compromise, and this is one that like just feels a little bit weird, is that it only has a mono speaker.
Right.
It has one speaker in the earpiece right here. And down here, that's where the microphones are, but there isn't a second set of speakers down here, so you don't get stereo sound.
That's definitely
a bummer, and it's just like a kind of weird kind of compromise, especially because, you know, considering the price of the phone, it is $1,000, and stereo sound has been kind of a standard feature on premium phones for many, many years.
I wonder if they're thinking like, no premium phone user would just be listening to their phone speakers for any reason. I do it all the time for videos sometimes, or if like I don't have a Bluetooth speaker nearby, an iPhone, you get it loud.
And the speaker is loud and it's punchy and it's like pretty good. You know, it's as good as you can really, you know, ask for on a single, you know, smartphone speaker. And I think the other maybe thing is that like, obviously the AirPods Pro 3 are out too. And I think maybe this is like designed for the person who's like, hey, I only listen to my phone when I have earbuds in or headphones or whatever. And so for some people that may not be a drawback at all.
But to what you were saying, Sam, that ooh factor, when was the last time we had that with an iPhone? You know, like it's been a while, maybe not since the iPhone 10 first arrived and we're like, oh, this is what a full face front kind of looks like. Android phones have had many oohs lately, right? They've had the foldables, they've had the rocky start, but also a steady rise to the point where Samsung is many, many generations in, Google several generations in, and people have seen foldables that they've also gotten really, really capable for what a cheap Android phone can do. And that is something Apple still can't do. We talked about the iPhone 16e being kind of useless at $600. And being so limited compared to what a $500 Android phone can get you. So this is interesting. If I didn't have kids, Sam, if I didn't have to be like, I want to be able to take a good photo if I'm far away, if I'm close, I need to go macro, or if I need to go ultra. Like, I need to take a photo and videos in so many different environments at a whim. I cannot live with like a single little dinky camera and hope it gets those shots, you know?
But you've been saying for weeks now that every media person needs to be a content platform, you need all those different lenses.
You need all those lenses. But you can, I mean, I think that people are going to be able to produce like decent content on the air because they all have the new front-facing camera. And I think that's a pretty big deal.
For sure. So, and I will say that the single rear camera takes a solid picture. Like, you know, the image quality is definitely there. It's that kind of lack of extra lenses, which can kind of be a bummer. And then, like
you can't do wide angle, right?
I mean, it's a main wide angle. There's no ultra wide.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's only a 2x optical quality zoom. And so there's not a ton of you can digital go past 2x, but you know, it's just, you don't have a ton of options in terms of just like other field of view kind of perspectives.
And that's a 2x crop in view too. So you lose megapixels when you do that, right? So
it might be like a sensor crop. So it's not digital enhancement. It's digital enhancement past 2x.
Right, for sure. So so you do seem impressed, Sam. Like you kind of, I think holding this, looking at this, you kind of see the vision of where Apple's headed. Where is Apple headed, you think?
Yeah, and so that's a good point. You mentioned the selfie camera, and it's using that new center stage, and it has a square camera sensor, and so you can just change between, and it will even do it automatically depending on if it senses like, you know, a bunch of people in the photo, in the selfie or groupie shot, where it, you know, it automatically changes between portrait mode or landscape mode because it's a square sensor. It can just do that automatically, and I think that is one of those. This is one of those things where I think a lot of smartphone companies are going to be copying this in the future for the selfie camera specifically. It just makes it so easier. You don't have to do one of these things where you're like, oh, I need to like, I want to get a wider view. I got to turn my phone on its side. You just does it automatically, or there's some buttons in the camera app, and it's very nice.
But I wrote an op-ed piece, Sam, about that specifically this week. So everybody go check that out. But the idea, this selfie camera, because it has a square sensor, I think it's the biggest deal for Apple's selfie stuff, for their selfie cameras, since the invention of the selfie camera for them. Like since the iPhone 4 first had a front-facing camera. And that was a pretty big deal back then. We didn't quite know how to use it, right? FaceTime just became a thing. People weren't used to doing video calls. Instagram was not a fully formed thing by that point. But we are so different with how we interact with our phones now. We're always taking group photos. Selfies aren't just for kids. They used to say it was just like a teen girl thing. No, everyone does it. It's a thing everybody does.
Totally.
If you're in a family, the only way to get a whole photo of you and your kids and everything is with selfies. So this is a game changer. And it's not just for the photo, Sam. Like it does it in the video mode too, so it can center you during FaceTime chats and stuff. I also think the dual camera mode, which is where you're going to be able to record video of the front and rear sensor at the same time. Yes, something Android phones have done for a while. But I do think it's going to make a big deal there too, because then you're not focusing on centering your head in the front-facing camera. Like center stage will keep you in there while you follow the action.
Yeah, while making you seasick though.
Well, you're not looking there. You're not looking.
Well,
you're
yes,
looking
but at, when you're for, you know, when you're watching like, that part.
See your reaction and, you know, see what you're looking at on the other side of the camera at the same time, yeah.
If you're doing some quick cuts, but like I have worked with people who they'll get on Zoom and they don't know that they have center stage on, and so it will zoom in on the face and then track the face around, and that is nausea inducing if you watch it
it's
for
a pain.
Too long.
I think it's implemented a little differently on the phone, but yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Mm-hmm. You kind of touched on this earlier, but I think if you look at the bigger picture, the Air is definitely Apple kind of entering a new era of its smartphone design, and they're testing it out with the Air. And a lot of things, it's not just like a pure design play. It also, you know, involves the engineering, because they have to make sure that, you know, you can fit a battery this thin and a camera this thin inside a device this thin. And that is, you know, a really, you know, obviously a very much company-wide effort. And then, like you said, it kind of points to, hey, I mentioned this in my review. You take two of these, slap them together, put a hinge on there and a flexible screen. It's very easy to see how this would translate into a foldable iPhone, in the same way that we saw the direct lineage between the Galaxy S25 Edge and then, hey, a few months later, the Galaxy Z Fold 7 came out and it was just super thin. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it really was, you know, two Galaxy S25 Edges slapped together. And then the last thing I want to touch on quickly is that obviously on a device this thin, battery life would obviously seem to be a big concern, in my experience, has not been an issue kind of whatsoever. I had days with over 7 hours of screen on time, and I still had 25% left at the end of the day. On top of that, Apple has thought about this because there is a very smart accessory. Now, our colleague Valentina wrote a very good kind of rant about, hey, maybe don't buy this new MagSafe battery. Yeah. And I think her main issue with it is that it's really expensive. It's a 3,000 milliamp hour battery, more or less, and costs $100, which is like double, triple the price of what,
That's barely a battery expansion, right? That's like 60% of that battery.
Yeah, it's like 65% additional battery for the iPhone Air. But this is the thing about Apple, and this is part of the reason why Apple people like Apple products so much, is that it's just so easy to use. Watch. If iPhone Air is low on battery and I need to charge, that's it. I'm charging.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, if I need to recharge it, I can charge the phone and it will pass the charge over to the battery pack. So super easy to use. And if you want, it will also charge the AirPods Pro 3 if you just put them on the back.
Oh, so that's cool.
To me, and you can also, it does have a USB-C port on bottom. So if you want to just, use a wire and charge any device, use it as a regular battery pack, you can do that too. And so to me, if you are like, someone who's like really focused on, hey, I want to travel light, combine this, with the iPhone Air.
Yeah.
And you have the AirPods Pro 3, that is just like a really good lightweight kit that you can do pretty much all your standard, modern techie smartphone stuff in a super lightweight package. That's kind of what I really like most about that kit.
Yeah. If you're shelling out the money for this phone, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing is like, battery. If you're already spending $1,000, which is $200 more than a base iPhone Air, obviously you probably have a little wiggle room in your budget to, hey, you're probably going to upgrade to the AirPods Pro 3 anyways, and then you might as well tack on another $100 for the MagSafe battery. That said, in my testing, I didn't really need to use it. For me, this feels like more of like a, let's keep it in your bag or, when you're going on a weekend trip, and so you just never have to worry about battery life.
It's the thing I remind people with phones and computers and everything, when we're testing fresh batteries, these are brand new batteries. What will be the story in a year? What will be the story in 2 years? Like, what does degradation look like? I'm also thinking about this from the EV side because I own a used EV, and it's like that's a thing that's just always on my mind. So it's good to hear there are no immediate battery concerns because those do pop up, and I think that was one of our main concerns with the Air, just given how thin it was. So
yeah, good. And even if you read, Apple doesn't provide official battery size specs for their devices, but even if you read Apple's material, the base iPhone 17 has 30 hours of video playback time. The iPhone Air has 27 hours of video playback time. So, even going by Apple's own numbers, it's not that big of a gap.
Yeah. So you're a fan. It's basically half a foldable. So no wonder. Yeah,
I'm primarily an Android phone person, but I really do like this device. Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
So I am kind of still concerned about like how thin it is and whether or not it's going to like totally bust open or something. If you like
titanium,
have it in the back of your pocket and you sit down on it. Tom's Guide did a video. You can find it online. It's kind of like a little panel discussion where like they really try to bend it. And honestly, I wasn't really sure whether or not like they were trying all that hard. So Sam, I'm not going to ask you to bend it right now, but can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So after, Sherlyn and Billy and I were out at Apple campus for the event. And after the announcement, we got a chance to go inside and see some of like the testing equipment that Apple uses, and they had a force meter. And so basically, they had a force meter that would test how far you can bend the phone. And I hit, I wrote it down. I applied 143 pounds of force to a test sled. And then they took an iPhone Air, put it in, a very, expensive bending machine, and they applied about 135 pounds to an iPhone Air. And you could see that it would bend a little bit, but it snapped right back into place. And like I said, it also has a titanium frame.
Right.
And so, and obviously Apple, I don't think they want a repeat of Bendgate from, like 7 or 8 years ago when that happened. And so they are very cognizant about that. And I think they have definitely, you know, put in the work to make sure that, you know, the strength requirements and the durability of this phone is not an issue. And you also get, you know, your IP68, you know, dust and water resistance rating as well.
I can imagine, like, if you in the design studio for a super thin phone, you just have a big sign on the wall saying no bending, no bend, no bend, whatever you do, whatever materials we put into this, no bend. Titanium frame, yes. Also ceramic shield on the front and back, right? So that is...
Yeah, ceramic shield two on the front and then regular ceramic shield in the back. And both have increased scratch resistance.
Yeah.
Okay, Devinder, I thought that you were saying, like, no bend as in, like, nobody try to bend it.
No bending.
No, it's actually, you're engineering for no bend at all. No, like...
Every device flexes a little.
And in order to achieve that, you actually need to bend it like several times a day, every day for years as you're developing it.
We never want any like, yeah.
Right. And the thing is like, obviously you can break any smartphone if you want to. We're talking about everyday wear and tear and like the ability, like, you know, there's people, you know, my wife does this. She puts her phone in her back pocket and she'll sit down and like that's the kind of thing is like that's what you got to protect against, like people sitting on the phone, you know, rolling on top of it, maybe even stepping on it. And for that kind of stuff, I don't really have concerns about the iPhone Air.
Things that can happen, it being on the couch when you sit on it at a weird angle, like so many things can happen to our phones. I do feel like Apple is talking up durability so much these days. I'm like, should I go case free? Should I be like Sam and the other folks who are just out there riding free because maybe Ceramic Shield 2 should be enough?
I'm never going to like make fun of someone who wants to put a case on their phone because, hey, these devices are expensive. You want to protect your investment. Absolutely. But like if there was any phone that you want to go case free on, it's this phone because covering it up would just like it would like it would hurt personally. It would hurt me to like cover up that design because every time I pull it out, it's like, oh, man, this is nice.
It's like having an expensive car. You're like, this is great. Great to have a Porsche. Nobody touch my car when I'm outside. Right. Nobody breathe on my car, basically. It kind of feels like that's the situation you'll be in. They also talked about that for the Pro and everything, too. It just seems like durability may be a little better this year. I don't know, Sam, this is your first embargoed Apple review, too. So congratulations for that. That is a tough thing to get. So this is a big deal for Sam. Nice phone for Sam to review here. What Apple is doing now, have you seen the sort of Apple Care packages they're offering? Because now there's like a group package where you can bundle three devices together for like an Apple Care monthly plan. And that'll cover breakage, that'll cover like typical things, but also theft and loss.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you have kids with phones, that seems like something you would probably want to do. Yeah, absolutely.
But maybe it's worth just investing in that for a little bit rather than a case and just like...
Yeah, for sure. If you are like already on like a family plan and you'd be like, hey, I have two kids, they are already on this and then I can throw myself on there without, you know, too much extra cost.
Right.
And at least you have some sort of like backup. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to be annoyed for a few days if the screen cracks or something. But yeah, I mean, that's what I would do. You know, people feel free to do what you want with your own devices.
Are you into the extended warranties since you're case free, Sam? Do you have ways to protect yourself?
For my personal phone,
right.
It's usually a debate for foldables. Kind of. Yes.
You need it. Yeah.
For a regular phone where like, I have a little bit less concerns, especially, you know, something that's like been proven to be like pretty durable in my experience. I wouldn't necessarily do an extended warranty, but
yeah. Gotcha. Well, so that's it. That's the iPhone Air. It's not as compromised as we thought, but still pretty compromised in certain ways. The photos, I think for some people, the millimeter wave 5G thing is kind of a big deal because let me tell you, folks, like for the past few years since I've had 5G iPhones, being able to like sit down in many places and just tether my laptop to it and get almost gigabit speeds, it feels crazy. It feels like I'm defying the laws of physics at how fast some of these speeds can get on a mobile device. So I don't want to lose that. But the Air is so pretty. I feel like that's the thing.
That's kind of a good segue to talk about the Pro, which is like very tanky. I was talking to someone else, but that orange color on the new iPhone Pro is very nice. Also, someone was asking in the chat that, yes, this is the sky blue one. And this is interesting because it really changes color depending on the light. Like I'm looking in the camera right now and it definitely looks like kind of a baby blue thing. But if you're outside, it looks just like regular white. Even in person right now, it's definitely more white than it appears, on my screen.
That's nice. That's nice. Okay, let's move on to the iPhone 17 Pro, which will be my phone of choice. Like looking at this and living with a 15 Pro Max for the past few years, I cannot deny I like big screens. Like I like so many things. I like having three cameras.
Yes, much indeed. Like Sir Mix-a-Lot.
I just like it. But having three cameras and having good telephotos is so good. Like I've caught like so many great angles of my kids in like candid situations where they don't know I'm taking a photo of them, but I get a nice photo of them together from far away. We go to the zoo, you get that stuff. With the new Pro, you have up to 8x optical zoom. You have 48 megapixels on the telephoto lens too. Like it's just good. I feel like this is going to be such a great creator camera. I'm right now pricing this phone out, by the way. Sherlyn reviewed this for us. Go check out her full review. But I'm pricing this phone out, and I'm looking at the deals offering. Verizon's offering up to $1,100 in credits if you trade in an existing Pro Max or something.
Wow,
so,
okay. That's a pretty significant
That's what I'm telling you folks. Look at your carrier. Look at like what your situation is. At that point, because they spread out the cost into your monthly fee, I'm like, I should just get a terabyte phone. This is the year of the terabyte iPhone, folks. Because it's literally $3 different per month of what
I mean,
I'd be
for $3, it's hard to say no. But the idea of like a terabyte of phone storage is just like, that still kind of blows my mind every month.
It blows my mind.
Like, I haven't thought about like the storage size in my phone for a long time. And every once in a while, like I'll have like a 256 gig phone, and I look at it, I'm like, oh, I have like 75 gigs free. Oh, I'm good. Like, you know.
Yeah, you're good. I mean, I used to store all my music on my iPhone, like back when I had like, my college music library and everything was like 300 gigs. I put that on all my devices. Now it's mostly coming from the cloud, but also you get a phone like this, you're going to be taking a lot of video. You're going to be taking a lot of photos. I'm like, just the idea of walking around with a terabyte of storage in my pocket just feels wrong. It feels illegal. Anyway, what's good about the iPhone 17 Pro, Sam?
It has an even more durable design. And like you said, it's really all about the cameras and their performance. Now, the iPhone Air and the iPhone 17 Pro line both have that A19 chip. Mm-hmm. A19 Pro chip, sorry.
Yes.
The one difference is that the Air has one less GPU core than the chip in the Pro line. So if you really want that peak performance, if you're, doing heavy video editing or stuff like that, then you probably are going to want the Pro line. And it's like really the Pro Max is like, hey, you have everything in that one phone, and you just never have to think about, I don't have the tools that I need.
You are a ninja. You are just like you can do whatever you want. You need to take a sharp video. You need to record a podcast. You could probably do some of that too. Also, I forget if the new iOS has background processing for hardcore tasks, but that is in the new iPad OS. So it's like that sort of thing where it's like when you like edit a movie on iMovie, it used to be a pain because you'd have to keep iMovie open, couldn't do anything else on your device. That stuff is going away. These devices are becoming a lot more capable and functional as like full-fledged computers. So that is why I'm like, yeah, baby, I need a terabyte of storage on this. Yeah. And it looks stronger because the rear is now, they're back to aluminum, but it's an aluminum unibody frame. As Johnny Ive would say, aluminum unibody frame. And ceramic shield on the back part too. Just in general, feels like it's going to be a tank. Again, maybe safe to go case-free this time. Yeah.
I'm really curious about that because I talked last week about how my phone, iPhone SE, yes, let's all make fun of me for a second.
It's time to upgrade.
It has some significant nicks in the screen because I never put a screen protector on. I was dumb. Will I need a screen protector with ceramic shield? I would really like to see some people who are like big into rock climbing or something, and they'll leave their phone like, completely case free, maybe even screen protector free on, a rock at the approach or something before they go bouldering. And like, is it actually going to like stay as pristine as Apple says? Because I never entirely trust what they say when they're like, the screen is so strong. Like,
It's tough. I feel like...
Is it made of diamonds? It's not.
Well, ceramic, their ceramic material is supposed to be stronger than like the Gorilla Glass stuff that they've had before. Like that is the pitch. This is Ceramic Shield 2. It's a higher number. It should be stronger, right? I feel like a screen protector is not a big ask too, because it doesn't add much thickness. It just kind of changes the feel of the screen. The question is like, do you need a case too? Maybe a screen protector with no case would be a good way to go with the Pro. But what do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, as someone who likes caseless phones, I like, you know, it's whatever. But like, I think rock climbers, like these are the kind of people who like, oh, I want something rugged, and maybe they want something with like a little tripod attachment so they can film themselves while they're climbing and stuff like that. And so that's when like the idea of a case suddenly becomes more than just protection. It becomes, you know, a lot more utilitarian, where you have like a mounting point that, you know, is built into the case and stuff like that. And then I'm like all for it. So yeah, absolutely. I should also mention that this is the first, the iPhone 17 Pro line is the first time Apple's put a vapor chamber inside an iPhone. Once again, Android phones have had these for years. Samsung has been doing this for years. But, you know, it does work. And, you know, it really does help dissipate heat quite a bit, which for the kind of people who are into the Pro Max phones, it makes a lot of sense to at least have it on that line.
For sure, for sure. And the vapor chamber is like literally just a little bit of liquid that's sealed in the device that is like helping to pass heat and forth through the cooling elements and get it out of the phone eventually. It's cool. It's definitely been on Android before, but I look at this thing and I see like, this thing is a tank. This is just going to do everything. And I think for years, my primary computer has essentially been my phone. That's the thing I spend the most time with. I take work calls on it. I do all sorts of stuff on it. I try to like offload computer time to like, if I'm going to play a real game, it's on my desktop. If I'm going to write, it's going to be on a laptop or something. Phone does a lot of like other tasks.
It's the one that's with you all the time.
It's with you all the time, and you get to be ready for anything with it. Ben, we were talking about like what you would upgrade. Have you settled on what you're thinking at this point?
I'm going to price everything out, and I'm going to see whether or not it makes sense to get a refurbished 16 Pro or a 17 Pro, because we were literally just talking about that at the show planning meeting yesterday. I want something that I can stay with for another like 4 or 5 years. And I know that I would be able to do that with the 16 Pro too. Like that's unlikely to become totally obsolete in the near future. I also want to be ready for, you know, some nebulous time when the iPhone actually has like a smarter Siri, like more machine learning capability stuff. And that's something that I'm not going to be able to do on a SE2 2020 edition.
Sadly, no. But yeah, definitely check your carrier, Ben. Check your carrier and see like what sort of crazy deals they're just offering. Like sometimes they're like, if you upgrade your line, I'm going to give you extra money. And then all of a sudden it's just like, it's the math is like magical. I would also say
that like at least for in terms of like the AI machine learning capabilities, the AI machine learning are so tied to the NPU and like the performance that's on chip, so that like the idea of buying an iPhone 16 Pro in the hopes that it will get way better AI performance down the line may not happen. Just because it's like you need the right silicon to support the new models in a way that like, you know, so they work together. I'm getting this is like kind of an industry wide thing. I'm getting the sense that it's been harder and harder to port back some of the more intensive AI tasks to older devices because they don't have, you know, enough silicon horsepower to really power these models and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like Apple drew that line with the 15 Pro Max, where they're like, okay, this one has a slightly better NPU and GPU, and that's partially why I was able to like stick with it for the past year. Do we have numbers on the NPU differences between the 16 Pro and the 17 Pro?
They are available. I just don't have them off the top of my head. And I believe
the iPhone
16e doesn't support Apple Intelligence either.
No.
So it's like you see these differences, even though it is like a 16 era line, it doesn't have, because it's the budget one, it doesn't have support for Apple Intelligence.
Anyway, go check out Sherlyn's review of the iPhone 17 Pro family. She also revealed upfront that she has become a Snake Clash addict on YouTube games And I swear every time we find the game Sherlyn has devoted her life to...
That sounds like you combined four
Whenever
different...
Whenever you ask, who's playing these games? The answer is always Sherlyn. Yep. Sherlyn is the one who keeps the LinkedIn games going. Like,
basically.
When you're checking to see like where an ex-coworker went and you see the little thing on the bottom right rail and they're like, we've got games too, guys. That's who's playing them. It's Sherlyn.
Yeah, apparently Reddit started putting games in the Reddit app and I'm like, who asked for this? I don't want this.
Don't want this. Anyway, Pro. If you want a Pro phone, it seems like it's a good Pro phone. Let's look at the iPhone 17, the base one that Billy Steele reviewed. I also wrote up a piece this week saying, like, this again, pretty good deal because we've got ProMotion on the screen now. It finally has the 120 hertz variable.
Such a big upgrade.
Such a big upgrade. It has the better center stage front camera, too. You know, some slight upgrades to the rear camera. I think the ultra wide got up to 48 megapixels. Like it's better camera all around, but this is a base iPhone, but still pretty capable, I think, for most people. And judging from Billy Steele, gave it a 91 out of 100. Criticisms from him, 6.3 inches, maybe too small for some. That is a weird thing to think about in the year 2025. And then, yes, one con is that the best overall camera performance is reserved for the iPhone 17 Pro, but we know that. We know that going in. For most people, this remains the phone to get, and I think certainly better than the 16e, which was a mess when it launched and makes even less sense now. It is just $200 more than the 16e.
Yeah, if you can afford it, do not get the 16e. Get the 17.
I have heard from people, I think in the UK, where the 16E is like literally half the price of the base.
That changes the math a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But for us in America, where it's a $200 difference, I don't really think it's worth saving a little money for the 16E, which has no MagSafe, has no Apple Intelligence, you know, just kind of a mess. Good basic phone. But just like last year, the iPhone 16 was a good basic phone. And that's worth praising, I think, because most people
It feels like the gap between the 17 and the 17 Pro is shrinking a little bit, which is kind of nice too.
Totally nice. Like once you add ProMotion, like that is the big thing. So now the Pro has, you know, better cooling. It has the telephoto lens, but not everybody's going to need that. Most people are just scrolling social media, maybe taking a few photos or videos or something. Content creators, influencers, all those folks will be happier with the Pros. I could also see people, you know, you see this with the big time influencers. They'll have the device that they use, their personal device, but also the device they create on. And then I could see somebody rocking the iPhone Air for their personal stuff and just being like, you know, the Pro is the one that does a lot of work for them. Any thoughts here?
You kind of summed it up previously. I think for most people, this is still the phone to get. You know, it's the right price. It does suck that if you want a bigger screen, you have to upgrade to a more expensive phone or like a significantly more expensive phone, but it does everything you want. And so, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I remember when a 6-inch phone seemed like it was huge. So we've come a long way. I think this will satisfy most people. iPhone 17 seems like a good phone. Anyway, I'm sure we'll have further coverage on all these things. There's still stuff we're testing. Sherlyn's working on her Apple Watch Series 11 review.
And shout out to Billy because he also reviewed the AirPods Pro 3 for us too. They are excellent. They are exactly what you want in a new version of AirPods. It's really that simple.
That simple. Like I pre-ordered those immediately just given how much I rely on AirPods Pro. And it seems like the orders from Apple were immediately like shipping weeks and weeks away. If you are desperate to find one, it seems like Best Buy still has them for pre-order and you can go into a store and pick one up on launch day this Friday, most likely. So that's a thing. But they seem exciting. They seem good. Happy to have them.
And small correction, apparently the 16E does support Apple Intelligence.
Okay. That's a good note. I think MagSafe was the big one. That was the big thing we were not really fans of right now. All right. Thank you so much, Sam. Stay tuned for more coverage on all of our iPhone stuff and all of the Apple hardware soon. Let's move on to what happened at Meta Connect this year. And I think the big news is the Meta Ray-Ban display glasses that have a built-in AR display. It's only on a single side. You only see it through one eye. It's going to be $799. It also works together with a wrist strap that captures your finger movements. They're calling it sort of like a neural connectivity, neural controls a little bit. But that's the whole package. It is super thick glasses that have a display, and then the wrist strap, which you can like do finger gestures. You can also do like typing with your wrist too. Zuckerberg said he's up to like 30 words per minute with that thing. But generally, it's just a way to like flick through menus and flick through things while within that display, without like shouting every single command.
And it's gonna be on sale pretty soon. I think the on sale date is September 30th. Surprisingly close.
Like, I'm of two minds about this, but this is the best version of this technology we've seen yet. Like, in terms of integrating an AR display in a pair of glasses that look vaguely like normal. These are super thick Ray-Bans. They have thick frames, thick arms, but you look at them and they look like hipster glasses, right? So I think like it's not that.
It's like even worse than that. Like, this is like Garth from Wayne's World, but like 10, right? But like times three.
It's like, it is very much like Garth, but you know, Michael Caine used to make big ass glasses really compelling too. Like, so the size and fit, that's something we don't know about. The actual technology, like, it looks cool, but I can't help but look at this and think, like, man, all this exists because Mark Zuckerberg hates phones. He hates the fact that he missed out on phones. The Facebook phone never quite became a thing, right? And he, for Facebook to exist, it essentially has to rely on the goodwill of all of the phone makers. So they have to rely on Apple. They have to rely on Google and everybody. They cannot control their own platform. VR and AR gave Meta/Facebook a way to like carve their own destiny a bit, and that is why they've like thrown billions at it, tens of billions, honestly. So we have here a pair of smart glasses that have a screen. The whole idea is like, oh, it'll keep you more connected with the world. You won't have to pull out your phone as much. And I kind of see that. I kind of see how it'll be a thing. Within that display, you can see things like incoming chats. You can get incoming video calls. You can see people like in the screen. It is supposedly super bright. I think it was like 3,000 nits of brightness.
I think it was 5,000 actually.
Yeah, 5,000 nits. It is very bright. We'll see like what the resolution looks like. Everybody says like it's a good looking thing. Personally, though, like after seeing this demo, I was like, huh, that's cool. It brought to mind that scene in Children of Men where Clive Owen's character is visiting his cousin, who's like the rich guy who's hoarded all the art from all the museums. And his kid is there at the table, eyes dead focused on like a phone screen or like a small portable gaming screen with like a wrist-based thing to control like the game. Dude is just zoned out. Dude is just like, cannot hear the world, cannot hear anything. He is just like into the game, vaguely moving his wrist around like some sort of insect. And it kind of feels like that is the future Mark Zuckerberg is building here, because the demos we saw, there were several demos of like, oh yeah, this is how these glasses could be cool. Hanging out with your friends and, oh, these glasses can tune out some of the noise around you and, you know, help you focus on the dialogue with your friend. That involves telling your friend to shut the F up while you tell, hey, Meta, start sound dampening or whatever, then your friend can speak. All these things involve shutting up whoever's in front of you, telling them to wait for this thing to process whatever is happening. And it just feels awkward. It feels real. Through several of the demos, even the first demos, this thing failed to do what Meta wanted. There's like an AI mode where the cameras can kind of see things and recommend, you know, a recipe to make or something. Wasn't working. They blame the AI. I can just imagine you're hanging out with friends. You're like, oh, I would love to talk to you, but my glasses cannot connect right now and render whatever I need to render. To me, it seems like, does not seem social. It seems like the opposite of social. But Sam, you are into the idea of smart glasses more.
Yeah. Like you said, kind of on the tech perspective, these are probably the best like smart glasses we've seen yet in terms of a tech, and especially that display seems really impressive. I've heard that like you literally, a lot of other smart glasses, you can kind of see the outline of the display from, you know, from people looking at you. These ones are apparently completely invisible, but at the same time, they are big, they're clunky. And one of the big issues is that like these seem a lot closer to what I want, but also very far away, because I would love to have sunglasses that have a built-in display where I can, you know, read text messages, see, you know, map directions, you know, do stuff like live captions while I'm out and about. And then they have built-in, you know, speakers for music and whatnot. And that'd be great. But at the same time, the wristband, it's so clear that the wristband should be built into a smartwatch. Unfortunately, Meta doesn't make smartwatches, and I don't think they're going to start up an entire new smartwatch division just so they can have a band that already does some other stuff to the band that you want to use with your glasses.
Sam, so, that's such a smart take.
It's a really interesting conundrum, because it's like, I'm not sure Meta has the portfolio to build this out in a way that is what people are really going to want. And so that's an interesting kind of challenge going forward for Meta. But I like the idea. And I think the biggest achievement is obviously the having the little gesture and haptics thing in the smartwatch, but also that display, because that looks like easily the best display that I've seen on a smart glasses to date.
It looks cool. Like, in theory, it looks cool. Functionally, I worry, like, man, that is... We've just spent the last 15 years seeing how much smartphones have sort of like destroyed our sense of society. Like, our in many ways, social media has destroyed certain aspects of our democracy and how we survive with each other. So to take some of those and to take some of those notifications and put them right up into your eye just seems like, man, there will be no escape if you have something like this, right?
That's a really interesting thing about, because remember when like earbuds first came around, and every once in a while you wouldn't know if they were talking to you or if they were on a call. And I think people have like kind of figured that out, but it's still, you still have those like awkward interactions. There's a similar thing for smart glasses where people will be looking at the display in the smart glasses, and you don't know if they're looking at you or the display. And sometimes like there's this like kind of weird look where you can, it's that far off looking into the distance sort of thing that when you're looking at the display. And so it's a really like weird sort of feeling. Yeah. It's like, oh, am I allowed to talk to this person right now? Or are they looking at the display in their glasses? And that's like, it's kind of like you're saying, that's a really weird social evolution that is going to have to happen.
There's so much going on here, too, because I'm not sure if either of you are aware of a conversation that's been happening on TikTok recently
about Gen Z this stare.
No, not the Gen Z stare. I mean, okay, kind of similar.
It's kind of related, but okay.
So there's this person on TikTok who like raced to 1 million followers in the last like 3 or 4 months. Her whole thing is going to restaurants, doing like little restaurant reviews in New York City, like trying out, you know, all of these interesting cultural dishes. But she's wearing Meta glasses, and she never tells people that she's recording. And yes, New York State is a one-party consent state where if your voice is in the audio, then I guess it's okay because you can say, I consented to this. But the backlash that I've seen of people saying, ew, this is gross, I don't like this, is, I think, really profound.
Yeah, and I think like Meta and these smart glasses companies, they kind of like just move forward and be like, oh yeah, everybody wants this, right? You want cameras at access at all times. What's the issue with this?
And there are some safeguards. Mm-hmm. Like obviously there's the whole, hey, you can film anything you want in public. That's just, you know, ground rules. But also the Meta glasses do have a light on them that you cannot turn off, that the light goes on when you're recording. And if you figure out some way to disable the light, the smart glasses will no longer record.
Is that true? Like if you put a piece of electrical tape on it, is that true? Because I heard another thing on TikTok. Again, TikTok is a really great way to like share urban legends. So I'm not sure if the story I heard is true. I'm not going to relate it, but it involved someone who had like a little piece of electrical tape on the light. And
it's not that hard. Yeah.
Obviously these are all very valid questions, but yeah, absolutely.
I see. So this is a comment I see a lot. Deeper9 in the chat, thank you for responding, says that person's in public, cameras are everywhere. We live in a society of constant surveillance, right? But it's also like, well, we don't have to like just make that the default, right? To keep basically pushing the surveillance state. I think like there's like basic elements of our humanity that we're just kind of like not even considering. Like, hey, are you okay being recorded? Like, you walk into a bathroom wearing a pair of Metaframes, people have legitimate reasons to be like, what are you doing? It's literally like walking into a bathroom with spy glasses. I've seen reports where people have like weird camera tech and they go to a bathroom at Disney and they get banned for life because Disney's like, what the hell? Is that some weird like Zoom camera shit? You're out, buddy. And we're literally creating these things that can just like spy on people whenever, basically at a whim, just ask Meta to do it.
Do you guys remember the idea of gargoyles from Snow Crash? The people who are like so teched out that they're like constantly carrying like a vest full of chargers and
that's
probably
me.
Like mobile like Wi-Fi stuff. Yeah. And everybody's like, you guys are so weird. Like, I don't even want to talk to you because you might be live streaming right now.
That's true.
And I think that might be like the weirdly like good vision of the future where you're going to have different like stratas of society. Where you're going to have people who are just like, oh, I am full into tech. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to have the glasses and the backpack and the vest and everything. And there's going to be other people who just want to walk around just, you know, regular old people. And these people are going to start to like the techie people hang out with the techie people and, you know, the regular folk hang out with the regular folk. And you're going to start to see that kind of those different stratas in society form over time.
But we all live together. We don't live in little islands separate. Like the techie people have to talk to the non-techie people. You have to go to the same restaurants, right? You have to live together. Go to the same grocery stores. It's kind of the thing I've noticed too with like influencers are just in the wild now, huh? Just like,
oh yeah, it's hard to go to a park in New York City and not see content happening.
Content happening, but also content that disrupts, like gets in your way. Content that asks for your attention and you just want to read in the park. So it's like, it used to be you have to worry about people like asking for money or asking for donations or whatever, just like the things that interrupt normal human society. Now it's just like people asking dumb questions for social media clout, right, for their channel. And anyway, all this stuff is kind of related. A society where we're all wearing cameras on our heads, I don't think is a good one right now, especially given like the weird like tattletale, I don't know, environment we live in right now when it comes to certain aspects of our culture.
And bringing Meta back the Meta Ray-Ban display glasses, the funny thing is that I actually, for most purposes, I don't want the camera in there. I want the display. You can leave the camera off the glasses, and I would be just as happy. But I know that might not be the selling point for, you know, mainstream audiences.
Right. But also, it's not the selling point for Meta, right? Meta wants you to have a thing with glasses.
Right. So you generate content to post on the platform. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
You generate content. Also, it's like taking your map data. Like it's using the stuff you do to make its own like algorithms better. I'm just like, I see this thing. I'm like, I do want to test it. Carissa Bell from Engadget will be most likely reviewing it for us too. I cannot foresee buying one. And also I worry about like where it leaves us if we live in a society where we're all just like staring off into displays and not to the people in front of us. Another big thing on TikTok, Ben, is to talk about the Gen Z stare, which is thing I'm encountered sometimes. It's not just like, oh, look at these youngs. No, it's like you talk to people.
And then they're surprised that like they're not just living in their own world. And
right.
I mean, it comes to another question of like, are you deep in solipsism and you just think that everybody is around you is like NPCs or something? Yeah. Like, do you feel accosted by them? We live in a society. Maggie was wrong. It's not just individuals and their families.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, I remember what it's like to be an awkward teenager. I was there too. But it's like, I think we're losing ways that we talk with each other and putting a display between you and the people you love. Don't think it's going to be a great thing, but we will see. Meta also showed off other stuff. The second generation Meta Ray-Ban frames, which have better battery life, better cameras. Technically the third generation, because I think the Ray-Ban Stories was officially the first one. And those were not as good and clunkier and more expensive. But according to Zuckerberg, like these are among the fastest selling consumer products out there. Like it is, people are buying them. Because the Meta Ray-Bans look like normal sunglasses, but they do stuff to help people with their social media. You could take videos, you could take photos, you can, you know, have some AI tools, or you could just play music right to your ears.
I mean, like, that's my favorite use of them, but yeah, absolutely.
The pitch, I mean, the pitch is interesting. It's more like, I don't, and I'm here with Quest devices and everything that I review and use often, but I don't want to buy Meta products. So that's just me, because the company itself has icked me out. What do you think of smart glasses in general? Are there good competitors that people can consider, Sam?
It really depends on the use case. One of my wife's friends was asking me, it's like, hey, he's a doctor, and he's like, hey, I want an extra display that I can, you know, hook up to a laptop, but I don't want like a portable monitor. And so for him, smart glasses actually made a lot of sense. And there's companies like
the X-Real stuff.
X-Reals and Vitures are probably the two leading kind of like smart glasses if you want more display stuff. I was going to mention this later, but I'm actually testing out some Rocket smart glasses, which have an interesting kind of display, and they look pretty good, you know, as far as smart glasses go. They're still a little clunky, like they all are, but this is going to be definitely a growing field of development. And obviously, there's some other big names. You know, back at Google I/O, Google showed off that they were, of course, working on some smart glasses too. Samsung has upcoming headset that is due out sometime this fall, and possibly some smart glasses that they might show off.
It seems compelling. We also saw they also introduced the new Oakley Meta Vanguard frames. So Carissa tried this one out. These look like the big, you know, Oakley sport glasses, like the big ones that kind of go.
These ones are always so funny to me, because the only people who I can ever see wearing them are like pro beach volleyball players. Like it's such a niche audience. I guess if you ride jet skis a lot, they would be good for you too. But like that specific like visor style of sunglasses is just like such a like unique section to itself. The big change for this is, instead of having the camera off to the right or off to on one of the sides, the camera's in dead center and has a wider field of view, which is nice if you want to shoot like first person video recordings. But the style just throws me off so hard that I would never even consider them.
I take back everything I said just now. Meta, if you put like a camera and all of your bone conducting stuff in pit vipers, my money is yours.
I'm sure they're working on it.
Anyway, these exist. They've had Oakley stuff before, but these are, you know, for people who are snowboarding or doing lots of sports stuff. Doing stuff out there. I do want to mention that I have also been testing some smart glasses, the X-Real 1 Pro, I believe the model is. They have so many models, and I can sort of see the use for it, but it's I wouldn't want to live with them all day, right? Like, I use a VR headset if I want to jump in VR, do immersive stuff. I use these smart glasses, the X-Reals, if I want to like play, need a second monitor like your friend Sam, but also could plug into your phone and just like watch movies, and you have the equivalent of like a 65 inch TV floating in your face.
In a lot of ways, smart glasses are like the ultimate plane time killing device when you're like have to fly and you don't have a ton of room for a big display or laptop or whatever.
But that involves, that's not something I'm going to be wearing all the time, right? That is, I'm in a space, I'm in a place, I want to engage with content or work or do whatever. So it's like I'm putting on my work goggles, kind of like what happened to HoloLens. So, yeah.
I always have this question of when is the year? And it's not going to be anytime soon, but when is the year? You know, if you show up at a new job, they issue you a company laptop, usually a company phone. When is the year where they give you a company phone and a company pair of smart glasses and no laptop?
Yeah.
I think that will be a really interesting like inflection point.
That's going to be so far in the future, though.
I don't think it's as far away as you think. It's not next year or the year after or even 5
years.
Ben,
This happened like 5 years ago. There was a company that was called Meta. Before this, it was also called Meta.
They built
big ass smart glasses, and they said they issued all their employees these smart glasses for them to work on rather than a monitor. You know where that company is now?
I'm pretty sure they don't exist anymore.
They're dead. They're gone.
Okay. Yeah. That was going where I hoped it was going.
Yeah.
Such a stunt.
All these cycles come around again, and maybe in 10 years, it might not be as crazy of an idea.
I mean, you really have to get up to speed when you're typing, though. Or you have to like make sure that it, you know, Bluetooth connects to a keyboard or something, because 30 words per minute is not going to cut it for most people.
Well, that's because he's doing this without a keyboard, right? So if you had a keyboard in front of you, you were doing it. Like when I use X-Reels, I have a keyboard in front of me.
You can still use a Bluetooth mouse, Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah, I could treat that like a real computer monitor. I think we have to think more deeply about human-computer interaction and how we use devices. And you know what's great? You turn on a device and it has a screen, and you interact with that screen. You don't have to worry about any other stuff. So
let me be a devil's advocate. Yeah. What if the smart glasses or headsets got so good that you didn't have any screens in your house? You have maybe a couple pairs of headsets lying around, and you don't have any like big black rectangles hanging off your wall or disaster. A desk with like multiple monitors. And so maybe this kind of declutters some people's houses.
Now, that is certainly like a feature I think Zuckerberg would love to see, and maybe something we'll talk about it with the entertainment side of Meta Connect. How do you watch stuff together with people you love? Then you all need glasses. Okay, everybody has smart glasses, including your kids.
This is a great segue into one of the last kind of announcements that came out of Meta Connect, which is the Meta Horizon TV Hub, where it's basically a new service that kind of aggregates a lot of different channels, like some content from Disney Plus and Paramount and a lot of these big providers, into one single place where you can watch content in a VR headset in a way that's properly designed for VR.
It literally looks like the Apple TV app. Like this is the same layout, the same like organization and everything. This is a good thing. On my movie podcast, we were just talking about it is really cool to watch 3D content in VR. VR is actually the best place to do that because you already have stereo lenses. You have like the tech just to do 3D. So the Vision Pro is great for that. The Quest 3 and Quest 3S are great for that. But finding that content has been a pain. So it seems like Meta is thinking harder about this and like giving you like easy access to all that stuff. And they brought on freaking James Cameron.
James loves his tech.
James loves his tech. So like Andrew Bosworth, like clearly starstruck. Like this is a guy who's like, I see him be very blasé about many things, but he's talking to James Cameron. He's like, I am facing God right now. I would actually recommend if you care about movies, you care about how we think about media, go listen to the James Cameron portion of the talk. It's like the last 15, 20 minutes of Meta Connect, but it's worth it. Just to hear him talk and hear him think about like what he wants to do. He's basically built a studio with technology for other people to create 3D content, and he wants them to do that too. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but James Cameron loves 3D, unsurprisingly. To what you were saying, though, Sam, I don't want to get away from this thought experiment. No screens in your house is a nightmare. Because then if you want to gather around, have family movie night or whatever, everybody turn on your glasses. Make sure you're all synchronized to the same streaming app. Make sure we can see the same virtual window in 3D space, right?
That's a fair point.
If only there was a way for all of us to see a screen in a single place in virtual space at the same time and stream that content all at the same time. It's called turning on a TV.
The scary thing is that it might not even be like, let's all sit on the couch. It's like somebody sends a message to the family group text and is like, yeah, let's watch something together. And it's everybody in their own rooms syncing up and, they're laying flat in bed. They're looking at what would be the ceiling, but it's actually a screen. And yeah, you might be able to hear, a family member laugh from the next room. I'm being way too dystopian about this.
No, you are absolutely. We are already doing that with our phones. Like part of the dystopia we live in is everybody going to their rooms and being on their own devices. Putting that in smart glasses or whatever is even more dystopian. But the idea of us all being in the same place and not being in the same reality is kind of like a big problem that we're all facing right now. Certainly one aspect of the thing of that certain political influencer who was unalived. The whole reality of like information people have about them versus what other people have, there is a huge disconnect in the realities we're living in. I'm really hesitant to start using products that even like literally make that more literal, right? Like what you see around you is not going to be the same as others.
And to poke a hole in my own kind of thought experiment, we already have TVs like the Samsung Frame and, rival devices where you can have a screen and you can disguise it so that, hey, it's not, it's not just a black rectangle on your wall. It's, it looks, you know, like it, you know, like it belongs, and you know, it can show art when you're not watching TV. So yes, and, but here's the thing. There are ways around this, but it's one of those things that, like, you know, I kind of like think about and daydream about is like, you know, how are these devices going to change just our day to day lives? And it's just really interesting to see all the different kind of branching paths that, you know, we could end up at, and then, you know, come back 5 years later and see, oh, here's what actually won out.
Here's what actually happened. It's weird, like, looking at the rise of smartphones, looking at the rise of social media, all these companies were chasing engagement and numbers and users and growth at all costs, right? It kind of feels like Zuck just wants that again, and except here he's like, oh, we have this, we own this space. We are leading smart glasses. We're going to get these displays out. We're going to be the leaders. We're going to be number one. And then the aftermath of that, it's like the Rohingya genocide that Zuck doesn't like to talk about. There's a lot of like downstream effects of all this technology that we have not really thought about. And Zuckerberg, his whole life philosophy, as we've talked about lately, is like, I'm not going to think about the past. I'm not going to think about problems. I'm going to be free as a bird with my smart glasses. Check out the end of the Meta Connect thing, because it ends in the strangest way I've ever seen a technology conference end. He gets on stage with Diplo. He changes into gym shorts. They're all wearing the Oakley Meta Vanguard, and they slowly go for a run outside in the Meta campus. Everybody in their own world. You know, everybody like seeing slightly different things. Dystopia is here, folks. I don't know. What do you think, Sam?
I am a little bit less pessimistic, but this is there are definitely some challenges and some adjustments that people are going to have to deal with. And it's one of those questions. It's like you asked this before. It's like when is society going to push back? You know, what is the thing that, like, he's like, no, we can all agree as a whole human civilization that this is not what we want. I don't think smart glasses are the thing, but that kind of like inflection point that's coming, and there's gonna be some fight about it. Yeah, absolutely.
The thing I keep on thinking about is Andreessen from like 10 years ago saying anybody who doesn't have smart glasses on will be at a huge disadvantage, you know, with his Google Glass on. Okay, yeah, that didn't work out this time. It might not work out like now. I am seeing a lot of people say, I am tired of my phone, and this is just putting phone on your face in an inescapable way.
That's my major thing. Like, I think as a society, we are starting to realize like how bad the phones have been for us, how bad like just being too connected has been for us. So it's like, yeah, just slap it on your eyes, then you can't escape. It is very much Black Mirror, as people are pointing out in chat. It just seems like I think we've had the experience to be like, oh, we can see this train coming. We can see the downstream effects coming of how bad this could be. I don't know. Talk about like societal responses, by the way. Remember how people basically were clowned wearing Google Glass? I see people on social media saying, like, if you walk in to my restaurant or whatever, if you try to like engage with me while wearing one of those Meta glasses, you will get punched in the face. And that's illegal, but also somebody pissed off about you potentially spying on them, or they think you're looking at their partner weird or something, or their kids weird because you're recording video. You're going to have to deal with a very angry response to that, because you are literally spy camming. You are literally recording video, especially if the light's on. So that is the sort of
even at a base level, you're pushing people's boundaries. And so anytime you do that, there's going to be some sort of conflict.
I think of this because, like, I remember going to, like, you know, events and parties and stuff while, like, in the midst of reporting. And sometimes, like, I'm asking people questions and, like, just chatting, and I start to write down notes, and they're like, oh, you're a reporter. But people are sometimes surprised by that, by the fact that I'm jotting down information or things that they said. And that's a fair reaction. And that was my bad for not saying, hey, you know, this is me. I work for this. I'm a reporter working on this. Anyway. Some things we're thinking about. I kind of feel like we should not trust Zuck when it comes to barreling into new technology without fully thinking about the societal consequences of them, but we will see. In other news, the TikTok deal may finally be happening. It does seem like Oracle founder Larry Ellison is going to be the one that's been rumored for a while, working together with Trump.
Which is a really weird fit, but yeah, go ahead.
It's all a really weird fit.
It's only a weird fit if you're not thinking in terms of, like, this is going to friends. Favored patrons.
And it's a whole thing, too, because this is, like, relating to how, like, essentially oligarchs are starting to control our media, in a sense, because Larry Ellison's son, David Ellison, founder and CEO of Skydance Media, like, he is going to be a more influential person. He's potentially looking at Warner Brothers to take over Warner Brothers as well. So these folks are just going to be, like, in positions, very rich folks controlling, like, the media we're consuming. Hey, this is fun. This is a fun future we're potentially going to be going. And the other news is that it may still use ByteDance's algorithm. I don't know. The thing that I've been spending time on when I'm, like, a little burned out is TikTok, because I think Instagram Reels is just, like, bad content and weirdly pornographic at times.
I was able to get the Gooner stuff out of my Instagram algorithm. It took some doing.
It takes a while. And also it starts popping back up. I'm like, how did this happen? What's happening here? I can't browse through this with my kids. TikTok in general, you watch out for swear words and stuff, but it is giving me the fun stuff. And also I feel like the community around TikTok has been stronger. But anyway, in other news, there was a rumor from Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo that Apple is currently working on bringing a touchscreen to a future MacBook Pro, potentially one coming in, I don't know, 2027, I think. Sure, why not? This is really stupid that Apple has.
This is the craziest reminder that it's 2025 and there still isn't a touchscreen MacBook for some unknown reason. Apple has never really explained it in a way that I fully understand.
Because they want to cannibalize something, something.
Yeah,
it makes sense if you think about Apple.
Sure, mm-hmm. let's do it. I was ready for this like 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So hey.
10 years ago, like when all the PC people were. But here's the thing. So I wrote about this. I wrote a piece called A MacBook Pro Touchscreen About Damn Time. Apple's thing, like what's ironic is Apple has popularized the idea of capacitive touchscreens. Like they are the ones who did it. Initially with the iPhone, then with the iPad. Yes, other devices came along, but it was like Apple's push that made it happen. But then the PC industry was like, oh, we could put touchscreens in computers. And Microsoft built Windows 8 entirely around touchscreens. That failed. Nobody liked it. But PC makers still kept making convertible PCs. The Surface devices came out. It became essentially a regular thing in computers because it's fairly easy to implement. And it's nice. I like tapping my screen. I like dragging my screen occasionally when I'm tired and I don't want to like hit a keyboard or get to my trackpad or something. So
and it's really weird how almost every modern, you know, smartphone, laptop has a touchscreen except for MacBooks, tablets, obviously. It was funny because like I was working the other day and my son came up and he kept touching the screen and he thought it was going to move. And I'm like, no, this is my company laptop. It doesn't have a touchscreen. And he was so confused. He didn't.
It's the most natural and basic interaction you can have with a computer, like with a computing device. So yeah, kids learn phone swipe. They learn iPad tapping and swiping super easily, super like that is how we should be interacting with our devices. This is why Apple. So like, it's like Apple and Nintendo are companies that are so like, that can be so stubborn because they're so big and they're so popular.
And to their credit, they are good at a lot of the things that they already do. And so that allows them the freedom to be like, no, we could do this, but we choose not to.
We choose not to because, hey, you want a touchscreen, fairly large device, go get an iPad. iPad is where we're focusing on touchscreen interaction. And to be fair, macOS has not ever really been updated to do good stuff with touchscreens. They have. Since the first MacBook Air, like it supports multi-touch gestures, but that's for like scrolling, swiping through apps and stuff on the trackpad. I could see the argument that we have not made macOS to be a thing with big touch targets for a touchscreen. Let's not even get into that. The rumor is that will likely happen. Let me see specifically what Quo says here. 2026, late production. Production of a 2026 MacBook Pro will likely have a touchscreen. A cheaper MacBook, likely a MacBook Air, will not have it that year, but maybe in 2027. There's no excuse. Just do it. And what's funny is that the iPad with iPadOS 26 has become more Mac-like because it now has a menu bar. You can now resize and move around iPad apps. So the iPad's becoming more Mac-like. Kind of makes sense that finally you're going to take a step back and just let the Mac be a little more iPad-like, I think. I want to shout out Billy Steele. Had a great article. He went inside the Apple Audio Lab where AirPods are tested and tuned. Looks like a fun anechoic chamber. So go check out that piece at Engadget. Anything you're working on that you want to shout out, Sam?
Yeah. Like I said, the Roku smart glasses that I'm going to have a hands-on for. And then I want to get back to reviewing some good old gaming laptops. We have the Alienware, their revised Area 51 16-inch laptop that I've been unfortunately had to delay for because of all these events. And then another, the MSI Stealth 16 gaming laptop. So got some good bread and butter stuff coming out soon.
Cool, cool. For a pop culture pick, I just want to shout out The Long Walk, the Francis Lord Santa adaptation of the Stephen King novel. It's incredible. It's in theaters now. I think it's one of the best Stephen King adaptations ever made. And I've always liked Francis Lawrence as a director ever since I first saw Constantine, which is a good movie. Don't listen to the comic fans.
It is a good movie.
It holds up. It's a good movie. It's a lot of fun. Sam, anything you want to shout out that you've been watching or reading?
Thanks for mentioning The Long Walk. I also want to check that out. And I saw the trailer for Chief of War.
Chief of War is great.
So right now I'm in catch up mode. So I'm watching Last of Us Season 2 and Severance Season 2, which obviously Last of Us, I'm not quite sure about. Severance Season 2 has been excellent so far.
Yeah.
And then maybe Last after that, I want to watch Silo and Chief of War.
Chief of War is really good, and I did not realize that it was going to be like native Hawaiian, like for the entire show in subtitles. But you know, it's a good show. Momoa
is looks
great.
Gorgeous. The cinematography. I was like that alone was like okay, I'm in.
Thanks for listening. That's the end of the show. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on X, but I think I'm going to start posting more in Blue Sky, so also at Sam Rutherford on Blue Sky.
Do Blue Sky, come on, yeah.
You can find Devendra online
at Devendra on Blue Sky, and podcasting at The Filmcast about TVs and movies, yeah.
I'm doing really esoteric radio tweets on Blue Sky as well, at Hey Bellman. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave a review on iTunes, because I swear it helps. And you can get the show on anything that gets podcasts. RSS, Spotify, maybe Carrier Pigeon.